Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Skate Podcast on WEEI.com.
Bobby Orr behind the net to Sanderson. Orr! Bobby Orr! Orr!
For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins and NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey. Like, it is sure. Yeah.
With writer and producer Brian DeFelice.
Brian DeFelice is an emerging talent.
Bridget Prue.
Yeah, he's a little bit on the hot seat.
Burn him!
And WEEI.com Bruins writer Scott McLaughlin.
Great Scott!
Lace him up for some Bees talk right now.
I'm a damn dog!
It's the Skate Pod on WEEI.
Welcome into episode 159 of the Skate Podcast. I'm Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. And the Bruins ended their brief three-game losing streak, their first losing streak of the season. They defeated the Maple Leafs 5-2 up in Toronto tonight. Guys, pretty impressive performance. You have five goals across the board, but none were scored by guys named Brad Marchand, David Pastrnak, Patrice Bergeron. So it just goes to show it was a complete team effort. And again, when the Bruins are going, this team has a lot of depth to display.
Yeah, and that's the key is, you know, it was a bounce back game where it's not just, oh, David Pastrnak takes over. Like, this is what has made the Bruins so good all year is, yes, you have Pastrnak having an unbelievable season and, you know, your other top guys playing well, but it's been their depth that's separated them from the rest of the NHL. And, you know, some of that had dried up a little during this three-game losing streak. It's obviously not the only reason they lost three in a row. Like, I'm not trying to blame the bottom six or anything. Like, obviously, power play has been terrible. But, you know, during that losing streak, it kind of felt like they needed the Stars to step up if they were going to win, and they weren't quite able to. Now you get a game where it's everyone else stepping up. You know, it's Forboard on a shorthanded goal after Trent Frederick wins a foot race against Mitch Marner, which is, you know, no small feat. Carlo scoring just his second goal of the season, you know, probably the guy more than anyone who didn't necessarily need a goal, but needed to have a good game. Like, Carlo in particular had a really tough go of it during that three game losing streak. His name's popping up in trade rumors. Like, it felt like if anyone really needed to kind of get into the All-Star break feeling better about where they were, it might have been him. And not just the goal, but, you know, just the way he played in general. Wednesday night, I just thought it was a really strong game for him. And then, you know, AJ Greer, so you get the fourth line involved. Jacob Lauko playing his first game in a while.
Scott, are you going to leave anything for anyone else to say?
Nope. I'm going to cover it all right now.
Just go for it.
So you get Jacob Lauko making a nice play on that. And then Pavel Zacha takes over. So, yeah, impressive effort up and down the lineup.
All right. Here we go.
I think that was actually like shorter than some of the ones I've had. Because I had to cut you off. I look at like the time, and sometimes my monologue goes for like 3 minutes, and I'm like, okay, I got to wrap it up. But that one was like under two, I think.
I had to hit you with the music a little early today.
Scott's like that scene from The Office when Dwight Schrute wins Salesman of the Year, and he starts banging his hands on the thing.
So back to what you were saying, Scott, to build off of the Carlo point. I like before we were even 10 minutes into the game, I had already like written a note for the podcast. Like, is this going to be a bounce back game for Carlo? Because immediately he stepped up into the offense and he had a chance where he was drifting down, you know, weak side and stepped right into a shot. And I'm thinking, not every defenseman would score on that, and Carlo didn't, but, you know, I'm thinking he was doing the right thing. He was heading in. He was right there making the play, and you could just see a difference with him. Like, okay, he's stepping right in. And then he did it again later in the game, and he ended up scoring on it. So you could see him playing more confidently and wanting to be involved in the offense. And also, he had a solid defensive game as well. And to your point about the scoring being spread out and not in the, you know, the top six, so to speak, the only people without points that were forwards were Smith, Bergeron, Marchand, Hall, and Foligno. Everybody else, including Lauko, like you mentioned, had a point. And Lauko hadn't played it since, what, November 3rd? Or it'd been since November that he had been in the lineup. So he actually was able to make a good play on the Greer goal and get the puck off the wall and set Greer off. But and then every defenseman had a point except for Clifton. So you just had this all around, like, when you look down the stats on the score sheet, you just see points everywhere. And but surprisingly not next to, you know, Bergeron, Marchand, and Hall again, though, kind of quiet. And they moved him back to, well, they moved him with Krejci and Zacha to start the game. Game kind of finished out with Checkline back together, but, yeah, just someone else that I had, like, there were a few things going into it that I was wanting to keep an eye on. Zone entries, Taylor Hall, how he was fitting now back on the second line, and whether or not Carlo was going to bounce back. So I don't know, Brian, what did you notice in those categories?
Bridget, that monologue was just as long as mine. I just want that on the record. I'm gonna track them all now.
Now it's Brian's turn. Can Brian beat it?
You guys keep jersey jabbing each other. I'm gonna take it quick and throw it back to you guys. I mean, I think those are all good points, Bridget, and I will definitely get to them. I'll get to them as well. But I think, so I don't kind of lose track of everything that you guys have talked about, I think the best thing to do is just kind of go back a little bit and just kind of break it down in chronological order. So, like, to your guys' point about the defensemen scoring, all defensemen scoring a point besides Clifton. I mean, Clifton had many chances to do so early on. He was joining the rush. I think he had a breakaway, at least a half breakaway at one point. Mm-hmm. So he could have been one of them to score as well. But I think on the Bruins' first goal, it was kind of karma, because who was it that got called for? It was actually Clifton who got called for a trip, I believe, but it was the toe pick. So it was nice to see the Bruins kind of get rewarded. I mean, I guess looking back at it, just a phenomenal penalty for Clifton to take, because the Bruins score shorthanded. So just really heads up hockey on his part.
So give him a point for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he didn't deserve the penalty, but it's a good thing that the refs were off on that one. And, you know, on that play, Trent Frederick kind of, you know, not to overlook this, he beats Mitch Marner in a foot race to get to the loose puck. Now, yeah, he has some size on him and bigger strides, but wins the puck. I think it was to Coyle, and he pulled up and found Forbert. You know, what's the nickname for him? Derek Scorbert or something like that, people call him. So,
yeah, good scoreboard or Orbort.
So he gives Boston a 1-0 lead. So did you guys feel that same way? It was kind of like, you know, karma for the Bruins to score on that penalty that they didn't deserve.
Yeah, I generally don't really believe in karma.
Oh, I definitely don't believe in karma anymore. Throw that out the window. That's not a thing.
All right, but yeah, I will say, like, it definitely would have been a tough break had they given up a power play goal there. And it, like, that's what you hate to see, is like you take a penalty you don't really deserve, and then the other team scores on the power play. And it's like, that's just like a really crap break for a team. So, you know, I think Bruins would have just been happy surviving that. But yeah, to get the shorthanded goal, and, you know, it's crazy. I tweeted this out. Like, Derek Forbort had never scored a shorthanded goal in his career before this season in 407 NHL games. And now he has two in 40 games this season. Like, you know, I know we talk about like Montgomery wants defense more involved, and it's like, I don't know if that really necessarily translates to the penalty kill, but it is nice to see Forsberg get rewarded with a couple of those this year, because obviously he's so good at penalty killing in his own zone and, you know, all the grittier aspects of it, blocking shots and clearing out the front of the net. You know, it's like, I feel like his eyes just light up when he sees that opportunity to get into the rush there as the trailer, and, you know, takes that pass from Coyle and just has like all the space in the world to walk in.
Yeah, the penalty kill is his domain. So he's scoring on it. He's on the penalty kill, and he just says to himself, it's my time to shine. So he steps into that, and he's got his shorthanded goals. And I mean, it was a nice play all around for him. So it's just kind of funny because he did a great job killing penalties the way he always does. But so it's kind of nice to see him score the shorthanded goal too.
Yeah, and his first shorthanded goal of the season, I believe, was against the Islanders at the Garden, if those listening remember that, which was a similar kind of play where he just joined the rush shorthanded. So, yeah. Now, unfortunately...
Wait, does he really have six toes on each foot? Or is that just like a thing that I saw on Twitter that's not real?
It's news to me.
I think that was just a deceptive photo, but... I am curious. I just don't know like how I ever ask him that question.
I know. And we see the guys in the locker room and they don't wear shoes usually. And I have never looked down because I don't want to. But like now I'm tempted.
Well, now the next time there's a press conference, and this is what I have to hear. We're gonna go to the guy in the back with the Scotland hat on. Hey, Scott McLaughlin, WEI.com. Hey, Derek, can you take your sock off real quick? I'm writing a story on you know, excess toes and whatnot.
It was tweeted out in case people are looking for it. I think Connor Ryan retweeted it, and I don't know. It looked like he's just taping his stick up like a very normal picture, but like if you zoom in, and I don't know who did this, but if you zoom in, there's definitely six toes though.
So. Oh boy.
Yeah,
wow.
But like then I saw people being like, well, is it just like are his toes just like curled in a weird way and it kind of looks like there's an extra one? Like, I don't know. I really didn't want to dive too deep into that on Twitter.
Well, this is what you're paid the big
We're already too
for.
Deep into it now. I'm getting uncomfortable. Like,
sorry.
I'm out on feet talk.
I'm not going to lie. Every time he touches the puck now, I think six toes.
I mean, you think that's weird. Scott has nine toes on one foot. But anyway, let's move on here. So, so unfortunately for the Bruins, they took a second consecutive penalty. This time they allowed a goal. Matt Grizzlick elbowed Alex Kerfoot behind the net. And by the way, the newest member of the Beanpot Hall of Fame, Matt Grizzlick and his father, was it John Grizzlick? Is that his name?
Yep.
So congrats to them. But on this penalty kill situation, the Bruins were able to get a clear. It was a puck that went over the stick of, I forget what defense it was for Toronto at the time. But puck went down the ice. Bruins thought they had a bit of a window there. But it was a good up by Samsonov to get the puck to Marner. The Leafs had quick reentry, tied the game 1-1. But what I loved about the Bruins in this game in particular was that every time Toronto got some life, whether it was tying the game or getting within one, the Bruins responded quickly with a goal of their own. And so after the Toronto tied the game 1-1, Boston responded with a great 5-on-5 shift. And that Carlo goal you guys talked about, where it was a bit of a muffin. I don't know how that one actually went into the net, but the Bruins deserved good fortune because they outworked Toronto for about 2 minutes in that shift.
I liked that during the intermission when Nesson broke it down. Andrew Raycroft, who you know, obviously expert on all things goaltending, literally just said, "I don't know what Samsonov's thinking here."
Yeah, because
he couldn't fathom an explanation for what was going on.
The only thing he could think of was maybe he was guarding, like he thought it was going to come to the middle, like the guy in the middle rather than all the way across to Carlo. But like he definitely did not slide as far as he needed to slide over. It was kind of in a no man's land of like not close enough to the post, but like also only like halfway out towards the shooter. So it was kind of weird. Like, and Carlo like had this really easy little lob.
Yeah, it was a bit of a changeup, which I think can always throw a goalie off. But yeah, Samsonov, yeah, he didn't get all of his over. He wasn't set. His stick like wasn't even like Carlo could have shot five hole because Samsonov's stick wasn't even in position to close the five hole. So yeah, I don't really know what he was doing, but nonetheless, though, that was really to Brian's point, really good offensive zone shift. You end up with Lindholm getting it over to Carlo. Lindholm had been low early in the shift. Carlo had like already rotated down low once. I think that it was the third line that was out there, and they were strong all game. You know, a few different iterations of it. I think in that particular case, it was Coyle, Hall, and Frederick. I think it was the normal third line back together. And that line was really good all night. And certainly, you know, they don't get the goal next to their names, but we're obviously critical on that goal.
Yeah, and Coyle played a really strong game, not even considering the fact that he had two assists. And I mean, he was just all over the ice. He was protecting the puck. He was stealing pucks, picking off passes, just making smart plays. And he was somebody who definitely had the full 60-minute 100% effort from him the whole time. And I think he kind of lifts that line. He kind of is the energy behind that line a lot of the times. And he definitely was tonight, because you can see like Frederick's energy following his lead almost. And also he like seemed like he wanted to protect him a little bit towards the end of the game when Coyle ends up at the bottom of a pile, when it ended up being a 4-on-4 because Bunting and him were going back and forth. And you see Frederick like hop in and try to protect Coyle. And then you hear, there was a hot mic moment where the ref yelled at him. He was yelling at him and said, get back the fuck up or something like that. Yeah. So,
poor Coyle and Bunting. They got stuck behind the digital board ad on that one too.
Yeah. The ref's butt had the board ad on it. I knew Brian was going to notice it. I put it in my notes.
I did not.
Brian, what?
I did not notice that. You know, I gotta be honest, I'd be lying if I were to tell you I've really noticed the digital ads lately. I've just gotten used to it.
Obvious, Brian.
I noticed them. Yeah, I noticed them like when they malfunction like that. Like there was another one in the Bruins zone tonight where I forget which Bruins player it was who was up against the board, and I think it was like a TD Bank ad. Just like straight up decapitated him. Like you just could not see the player's head anymore.
Yeah, it's like a bad green screen where it's like some, yeah. Like if you were to wear a green skirt, you'd look like you disappeared. It's like what was happening.
Yeah, the digital ads, like they just beat me so bad earlier in the year. It was like whack-a-mole. They just sucked all the life out of me. I have no idea.
I'm sorry that you've clearly been defeated by them.
I have. Hey, you know what? No one to walk away, right? No one to walk away. You guys bring up Bunting. I mean, what a little weasel he is. He's not even like an effective rat. Cause like, I just don't think he really, like a good rat draws opponents into penalties. Like he's just out there like yelling at himself in the mirror essentially and calling out refs for missed calls. He's diving and he's talk about a complainer. I mean, he's somebody that I talked about it before. But like, he's somebody that's new to this Toronto lineup since the last time Boston played them in the playoffs. And over seven games, believe me, you would really he'd be your least favorite player after that. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but he's not even a whatever.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
third period, guys. Pretty entertaining period. Boston gets a 3-1 lead, which, by the way, I don't. I was baffled how there wasn't a delayed penalty on this. Like, even though Greer scored, like, the whoever it was, like, their stick was clearly in his hands to the point where it's like he had to let go of his stick, and Greer, you know, makes a great snapshot top right corner with the stick still in, like, in his body. So I don't even know how the refs didn't have their arm up for a delayed call, but nonetheless, AJ Greer gives the Bruins a 3-1 lead, drops the gloves with Wayne Simmonds right after that on the ensuing faceoff, which dates back to the last game when there was that scuffle between periods. But I guess this is a good opportunity to bring up AJ Greer's effort tonight, along with Jacob Lauko, who found his way into the lineup, like Bridget mentioned, I think she said early November. So the Bruins' fourth line, whatever the combination was tonight, they provided energy. I think it changed a couple of times, but, you know, you're missing Thomas Nosek. And I know there was speculation maybe about this kind of being maybe a trial stint for Lauko with the trade deadline approaching. I don't know if there's validity to that, but what did you guys make of that combination of Greer and Lauko? And they were with Frederick at times, and other times probably like Foligno. I don't really know, but they had a good game tonight.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, with Lauko, it's interesting, like, because there had been those rumors that, you know, he might want to change or whatever somewhere where he's going to get more opportunity. But then, like, now, I realize guys can say one thing in public and nothing behind closed doors. But I talked to Lauko on Tuesday after Bruins practice, and, you know, he didn't sound like someone who was looking for that. Like, you know, he said, like, he was up here longer than he expected the first time, and he was grateful for that opportunity, and, like, he was grateful to be back. Like, he was saying all the right things. He didn't sound like someone who was disappointed. Like, he admitted, like, it was tough when he first went back down to Providence. It took him a while to get to his game, but he said he feels like he's been playing better recently and, you know, was in a good place and hoping for another shot. So, he didn't strike me as someone who's, like, disappointed with the way the season's going or, you know, the opportunity he's getting. But we'll see. You know, I don't know how much. To me, that would almost just be more, like, if they traded Lauko, I feel like it would almost be more of, like, just helping a guy get a change of scenery, because I don't really know how much value he has, to be completely honest. Like, not even just like a knock against him, but he's not a super young prospect. I don't know, like, how much upside he has in terms of being more than what he's shown in the NHL so far, which is he can be a really solid fourth liner, and maybe he has third line upside at some point. But, like, you know, those players are nice to have, but they're not really valuable trade chips. Like, teams can find those guys in a lot of places. So I don't know about that. Like, could he be thrown into a trade if he really is looking for some sort of change? Sure. But he's not going to be like this one of the centerpieces of like a big trade or anything.
No, definitely not a centerpiece of any trade. But at the same time, I feel like the Bruins aren't really looking to, like, decrease their depth on the fourth line. You know what I mean? Like, it almost right. feels like they would like to know that he's there for a deep playoff run if needed. So it doesn't make sense to me that they would move him at all, really. But to the point about him, you know, how he fits in to the team right now and where he played on the fourth line, how they look together with Foligno and Greer, I thought he provided more than McLaughlin did in his time up. I thought that he looked like a better fit there. Now, and we talked about how Kopanen was more of like a one-for-one guy for Nosek, but obviously they changed things up with a fourth line when they bring in Lauko, totally different style player than Nosek, much more like hard-nosed, tougher kind of guy. So I thought he fit in well on that line. And you see that assist he got on the Greer play wasn't the only good play he had either. So in his time, he's made the most of it, which is all, what you can ask for. And he's been rewarded for it. So I don't understand, and I don't know if it's true or not, but to me, there would be no reason for him to want out at this point on a cup contending team that you might get time playing in the playoffs. And, like, it has not been unfair to you that you're out of the lineup in this roster. Like, you, when you've earned your time, you've gotten it. That's kind of all you can ask as a fourth liner and as a guy who's trying to crack the NHL. So I'm sure everybody wants to play, you know, every game, but sometimes that's just, you're not going to get the easy way. Sometimes people look for the easy way out. I think he's somebody who's worked hard enough that, and understands that, that he wouldn't really want the easy way out anyway. So that's just how I feel about him. I thought he had a good game. I thought it was nice that over the road trip, they were able to call up three different guys, and finally we get to analyze a little bit of difference in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, everybody wants to play. Everybody wants to be part of the regular lineup. So it's not, you know, it's not damning a player if that's how he feels too. But the fact of the matter is, this team's on a historic pace to start the year, and it's just like you said, it's not one of those situations where it's easy to enter the lineup when that's what's going on in front of you. Before we move on to the star of the third period, did you guys have any thoughts on AJ Greer dropping the gloves after that goal? Scott, I think I saw you tweet. You may have thought it was ill-timed, and he may have been, you know, a little bit outside of his weight class in that fight.
Yeah, for sure. Being a bit outside his weight class. Wayne Simmons, obviously, been a very good fighter his entire career.
And was much bigger.
Yeah, I just thought that the timing was, like, in a vacuum, I would say that was not good timing on Greer's part. You just went up 3-1. The only team that can, your team has momentum. The only team that can get momentum from a fight is Toronto in that case. So I didn't love the timing, but I also understand that there was obviously carryover there from the last game, like, right? Like, Simmons and Foligno fought, and then at the end of the second period, there was a shouting match between Greer and Simmons. Like, everyone's kind of standing around, not leaving the ice. So obviously there was something there. And, you know, I think I'm assuming it's Simmons who proposed the fight, or, you know, probably said something like, "Hey, now's your chance," or whatever. And I don't know, maybe Greer, you know, feels like he doesn't want to back down or something. But just, again, just from a timing perspective, like, the Bruins didn't need momentum, so they weren't the ones who needed a fight there.
And I feel like if you asked him after whether or not he made the right decision, he'd probably tell you no. Especially the outcome of it was, I thought he might have gotten a concussion, and he took, like, the first shot, like, hard. And he ended up, like, having to turn his head, and he just took a bunch of punches in the back of the head. And then at that point, like, I felt like he wanted to go down to the ice and just was like, "I'm going to go down right now because I'm getting my ass kicked." And he's a good fighter, but sometimes you get hit with the first punch and you can't recover. So, he got pulled out of the box while he was serving the fighting major by a spotter to get double checked for a concussion. He came back a few minutes later, finished out the rest of the third, like, last 10 minutes of the game. But you, I think, maybe just are on an adrenaline rush. You're like, "I just scored, it's great." And then you hop in there, and we know what his, like, MO is. He's kind of more of an old school type player, and that's the kind of thing he can bring. And I guess maybe the thought on the momentum thing would just be like, "All right, well, I just scored. And if I, you know, fight and win this fight, maybe it's just, we're just going to step on their throat," kind of situation.
Yeah, to that point, and Scott kind of hit it too, from a momentum standpoint, was the smartest thing? Yeah, I guess not really, because like Scott said, it's really, unless AJ Greer kind of clearly got the upper hand in the fight, the momentum really just kind of goes to Toronto there. Now, I will say, I definitely think Boston, to a man, they're going to be like, "Well, no, let's make sure we finish this out, because you know, Greer's, you just took a few licks there." So I don't know. I mean, I do think the Bruins, they did pep up, or they stayed pepped up, but that was a nerve-wracking fight to watch, because it was one of those fights where Greer's kind of he's not the most technical fighter. He kind of just, he fights on emotion, and it was one of those fights where I could have seen him, like, he put his head to the side to kind of alleviate some of the damage from some of those shots. And then it's like he tried to get one at the end, and that's one of those situations where sometimes you see a guy lean into a hook, and it can end pretty badly. So I'm just glad he was okay, because Simmons is a really experienced fighter, and but you can't question Greer's courage. So I mean, stick taps for him on that, and that's something that he's provided for this team all year when he's been in. So good on him. The timing wasn't the greatest, but like I'm never gonna damn a player for dropping the gloves. I mean, that's a good teammate there. So as the game goes on again, Toronto makes it 3-2, and then the Bruins respond 4-4 after Toronto scored. Again, back to the bunting stuff. It's like your team just scores to make it 3-2, but you can't help yourself. You have to get into it with Coyle behind the net, and it turns into a 4-4 situation. And the Bruins are the best 4-4 team in the league statistically, and tonight was no different. They go out there, and right after Toronto makes it 3-2, Pavel Zacha, Krejci, who else is on defense with them? McAvoy was out there, and maybe Lindholm. I don't really
remember. I think it was Grizzlick.
Grizzlick, okay. So, I mean, puck possession out the wazoo. I mean, they controlled the puck the entire time, and Zacha almost scored before he did score. He had two rushes to the net, but Zaka's goal was the puck retrieval behind the net before he even got it up to the blue line. And then when he got the puck back at the blue line, that cutback move to his forehand, elite skating, elite edge work, and then he just rips a snapshot top under the crossbar down. And he's played 9 games for Boston since signing that extension. He has 10 points. He has 6 goals and 4 assists. And after tonight, he has, because he got 2 goals tonight, he's played 51 games this year. He has 35 points, 11 goals, 24 assists, 35 points. That's good for 5th on the Bruins in scoring, 3 points behind Bergeron, same game as played. What an absolute signing trade by Don Sweeney this past offseason. Zacha for Holla. What an addition he's been to the team this year. Even when he wasn't scoring this year, his play has just been excellent. He's a Swiss Army knife. He can put him in a ton of different situations, and he complements a lot of the guys that he plays with on this team.
Yeah, and when you see shots like that first goal tonight, or the one-timer goal he had against, I think it was Philly, it's like, man, if he starts shooting more too and making use of that shot more, like now the goal total starts to go up, which it has recently, to your point, 6 goals in the last 9 games. Like the playmaking and everything else about its two-way play was already there. So now if the goal scoring starts following, it's like, yeah, like that now that is not just a player who looks like a top 6 forward, but now one who's putting up the numbers of a top 6 forward. And obviously he's been a really good fit on that check line with Krejci and Pastrnak, which wasn't together to start the game tonight, but then gets put together and puts up, they were all on the ice for the last goal, him and Krejci out there for the 4-on-4. But yeah, I mean that 4-on-4 goal, like just great possession. At some point opponents are going to realize, like if you give the Bruins that high cycle play where one guy kind of loops out of the zone and then picks the puck back up, like they're going to kill you. And I know teams don't like to pressure out that high on 4-on-4, but like the Bruins are making teams pay for that. They've done that a few times now where they get that movement out high and it's a guy who kind of cycles out of the zone and then comes back in with speed. And in this case, it's Zacha who then makes that cutback move. So they're kind of finding that soft spot in the way teams defend at 4-on-4 and really taking advantage of it.
Yeah, and another thing that I had put in my notes, like right as the game started, we're talking about before, 10 minutes in or whatnot, before anybody scored, was Zacha. Like it just popped in my mind because I'm watching him in the first period set people up. He set up Hall. He set up that one, that chance by Carlo I had mentioned earlier, the other time he stepped up in the offense before he scored. He played well with Coyle, like on the second power play unit. He fits in with, those guys that are normally on the third line. He fits in on the check line. He's factored in at not much this season, but he has at times played with Marchand and Bergeron, and it's just kind of like, where can't you put him? He's been able to adapt, and I think that's just because he came in with a mindset that I'm going to like make myself fit wherever I have to fit. I can play wing, I can play center. And he's all of a sudden just setting up. Everyone just kind of seems like he's on that wavelength with guys that he's not even really playing much time with on the same line, like Charlie Coyle. And with Hall on his line today, he was able to set him up early for what looked like maybe it could have been or should have been a goal. So I've liked his game, and the shot was just like, that was an incredible shot bar down. And then he comes back and scores another one later on what was pretty much a layup. But he's making himself known. And because of those two goals, the Bruins end up with a comfortable lead.
Yeah. It's interesting because going into the season, Scott made a comment and he wasn't alone. I mean, I echoed it. Bridget, you echoed it. A lot of people were echoing this sentiment that the prospect of a line with David Krejci, David Pastrnak, and Taylor Hall could be potentially the best line in the NHL. And all of a sudden, there was a I don't know if it was when Hall got hurt in a preseason game, but that preseason game at Madison Square Garden against the Rangers, they put that check line together for the first time. And they had instant chemistry, and it kind of jumped off the page. And I remember then thinking, this could be interesting. I could see Taylor Hall losing a spot. And then as the year got underway, it was kind of a conversation because they played that check line together more and more. And it was kind of like, well, maybe they're just trying to balance out the lines a little bit. And, you know, Hall, this is when Hall first went down to the third line, right? And the conversation was, well, Hall's not a third line player. He'll go back to the top six at some point. And somewhere along the way, it's been undeniable the chemistry that they have, and they look a lot better when they're together than when Taylor Hall's with Pastrnak and Krejci. And I'm just a huge fan of Zacha. You know who he kind of reminds me of? I don't know if it's a perfect comparison, but one former Bruin that comes to mind. Now Zacha's got like 3 inches on this player, but his hands, his shot, and his IQ kind of reminds me of Riley Smith. Do you see a little bit of that by any chance, Scott, Bridget?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I don't think that's a bad comparison at all.
Both 18, too. Both number 18.
Yeah, also true.
That's true.
But yeah, definitely in terms of just the smart two-way play, like being good in their own zone, good playmaker. And, you know, I think Zacha, if he takes advantage of his shot more, I think can be an even better finisher.
And he's got a stronger shot.
Yeah, although Riley Smith he could be a pretty good finisher too. But yeah, I think that's a pretty good comparison. I was just looking, quick trip to a stats corner.
Here we go.
5-on-5 scoring for the Bruins this season. Pastrnak number 1, 35 5-on-5 points. 2, David Krejci, 29. 3, Pavel Zacha, 28. Then it's a drop down. Taylor Hall, 23. Coyle 22, Bergeron 21, Marchand 20. But yeah, so just kind of highlighting the way that check line's been playing at 5-on-5. And, you know, it wasn't, I feel like it was maybe like a month and a half ago. It wasn't that long ago that we were talking about how we wanted a little bit more. There would be flashes, but, you know, there was still like stretches of time where that line was kind of breaking even at 5-on-5. After Wednesday night, they're goal difference on the season now 19-11, and I feel like, again, probably like a month and a half ago, that was right around 50%. So they've really picked it up and been on a roll here. And you know, obviously you see that just watching it, but now, you know, numbers also really backing it up.
Yeah, and I don't want to gloss over Pastrnak because, I mean, we're spending a lot of time on Zacha, and rightfully so. But Pastrnak did have that one play where he deked out two defenders. And I, the only reason it wasn't a goal is because it was rolling kind of weird and might've bounced down him at the last second. But like, I feel like usually he would have put it in. He was in behind two guys, and it was one of those elite moves that he made. But, he was named the NHL second star of the month. So, he's still looking good, even though he got the one assist, but didn't end up scoring. He was very, very close.
Yeah, that was like a pawn hockey move when, you know, flips the puck by, I think it was not Mike Riley. Hello, Morgan Riley. And, yeah, the puck was on edge a little bit. So kind of some tough luck there, but yeah, I mean, he was better tonight.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
One thing, I guess, just to bring up briefly, because it's something that they have to address on the other side of this All-Star break. And once again, tonight it just wasn't great. Now, they only have one opportunity in the power play, but did you see any sort of improvement on the power play tonight? Again, they only had 2 minutes of PP time, but it wasn't really great.
I thought they got into the zone a little better, at least. Like, they were at least getting into the zone. But then they weren't holding onto the puck, or I should correct that. They were holding onto the puck too long. They were too slow moving the puck and moving bodies once they got into the zone. I thought they were just too stationary, and Toronto was closing quick and forcing some turnovers. So step one, I guess, or, you know, step one would be just keeping possession off the faceoff. But step two, at least they were getting into the zone a little better. With a little bit of speed, but then the issues once they were in there were definitely still there.
And they did have Krejci instead of Hall. Like, they made that adjustment, and entries were better, but small sample size. And now that we know DeBrusk obviously didn't get into the Toronto game, things will change back the way that those dynamics are after the All-Star break, when DeBrusk comes back. I don't think there's any reason to think he's going to be held out any longer. Like, he should be back that first game. Which I got to double check what date that is, cause it's so long away. It's so far away.
I think it's the 11th, I believe.
Yeah. Against the Capitals at home. So as of right now, no signs of setbacks and no reason to think he wouldn't be in that game.
Montgomery said on Tuesday he would be shocked if DeBrusk doesn't play in that game. DeBrusk was on the ice for practice Tuesday in a non-contact jersey. He skated a little bit before practice and then was on practice for about half the practice until they got to special teams work, and then he left the ice. Obviously, you know, since he's not playing yet, he wasn't going to be part of special teams drills.
So when he gets back, like, I would anticipate the Bruins going back to that top nine look of DeBrusk on the right side of Bergeron and Marchand, keep the check line together, put Hall back with Coyle and Frederick, and then and, you know, obviously Montgomery shuffles the lines around during the games too if they need to, but as like starting points, I would imagine that's their top nine. The fourth line will be makeshift depending on, you know, no six Silla for a little bit, but and then, yeah, to your point, Bridget, the power play should get back in the sink with DeBrusk there as well. So, you know, obviously DeBrusk didn't play tonight. Neither did Austin Matthews. We haven't mentioned that, but whatever. I mean, we're not going to take anything away from this win by the Bruins. I mean, they were without a, you know, top line forward, and obviously not comparing DeBrusk to Matthews, but the Bruins took care of business, which is good. So they go into the All-Star break, 39 wins, 7 losses, 5 overtime losses for 83 points. And I guess, guys, that's a little bit better than treading water to start the year. So good for them.
to just every time I like look at the the standings and the record and the points, I just think back to my friends and other people, other like writers in the off season that were like, Bruins aren't making the playoffs, I guarantee it. And like, I almost took a bet with Ryan Garvin, who's another producer at WEI, because he was dead set that the Bruins were not going to make the playoffs. I was like, bro, you are so wrong. It's like $50 on it. And then he kept being like, you know, maybe not, but I would definitely have $50 at this point. Would it be safe to say? But before we switch gears, I just wanted to say one more thing that we learned about the matchup with Toronto, without, you know, the Austin Matthews thing aside, was what the goalie matchup might look like. So Samsonov and Ullmark going head to head against each other, it was kind of an interesting, you know, goalie matchup. What that would, you're trying to imagine what it could look like in a 6-7 game series, and Ullmark came out looking like the better goalie.
Well, because he is. He is a lot better than either goalie Toronto has. You know, it's funny, like everyone mocked Toronto in the offseason when they decided to go with the Matt Murray, Ilya Samsonov tandem. Then for a while it looked like they'd gotten it right. Like both of those guys were playing really well. And then I was looking at this up during the game tonight. Over the last month and a half, both of them have save percentages under 900. Like they have crashed back to earth. And
but Samsonov's record at home was like decent, and like not exactly comparable to Ullmark's record at home, but like those were both two goalies who could play at home very well.
Yeah, he has been really good at home, but in general, it's like if you're Toronto, if you're a Leafs fan, I gotta imagine like you're starting, if you're not there already, you're starting to have the same old concerns of like goaltending is gonna let them down. I don't know how you can feel great about that tandem. I don't think they're in a position to go out and try to trade for a goalie. Like, I feel like they'd rather address other needs. So I guess that, you know, maybe they surprise us and they do try to do something, but they're probably just rolling with those two. And, you just hope one or both of them get hot at the right time, because other than that, like, I don't think there's a whole lot of hope that they're going to suddenly both be great in the second half or anything. Like they're mediocre goalies. They might have hot stretches, but they're also going to have stretches like this where goaltending becomes a weakness for them. And if that happens in the playoffs, that's, you're looking at another first round exit.
Yeah. I also, and look, I know Jake Muzzin is not an option for Toronto this year. He's had, incredibly bad luck injury wise. And, you know, it's tough to criticize Toronto's personnel on defense when their number one defensive defenseman is not an option for them. Right. I mean, if you do that to any NHL team, it's kind of like, it's tough to overcome. That said, like, I know Toronto's team defense analytically, let's try that again, has been really good this year. I think they're right up there with Boston as far as not like actual numbers wise, but they are, I think, number two or three in a league with team defense. Boston, I think, is just so much better than everybody in that regard. But I mean, their personnel on defense is not that defensively, it's not that impressive either. I mean, Morgan Riley is not a great defenseman as far as actual playing defense, and even offensively,
Morgan Riley might actually be their weakest in terms of like actual defense. Obviously, he brings a lot of offense, but
yeah, and you know, Giordano is like an awesome, you know, veteran, but they don't really, and I, whatever, but I guess to your point, Bridge, about the goalie matchup, am I mistaken if Boston gets by the first round of the playoffs this year, which we all anticipate them doing no matter who they play, that's the bar they've set, they have to play the winner of Toronto Tampa, right? There's no avoiding that second round matchup, right? It's one of the other. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. I think we'd all prefer to play Toronto, right? On this podcast.
Well, yep. For a lot of reasons, yes.
Yeah. So, okay. So anyway, if they do play Toronto in the second round, yes, goalie matchup Boston. Every matchup should be Boston. So Scott, I'm gonna throw it to you. There was a last time we recorded about a few hours later, the first shoe dropped in the trade market this year, heading into the deadline. If you want to discuss the Bo Horvat trade, and you know, the Bruins obviously weren't a part of that trade, and that there's been, you know, speculation about would they have been in on them, should they have been in on them. So I'll throw it to you if you want to discuss those details, if you have them in front of you, or Bridget, if you have them in front of you. I'll just keep talking until one of you guys has it. But
well, yeah. So Canucks traded Horvat to the Islanders for Anthony Beauvillier, the Islanders' top prospect, Atu Ratu, and a first-round pick.
What a name, by the way. That's one of the best names.
Yeah, great name. Yeah, so, I mean, as far as the Bruins being in on it, I think the Bruins were in on it. Now, to what extent does that mean, you know, yeah, I think they talked to Vancouver about the possibility of trading for Bo Horvat. Do I think, you know, I don't know if they ever made an official offer. I don't think so. I don't think they were going to match the Islanders' offer. Obviously, they didn't. You know, the equivalent offer, if you're the Bruins, there had been, so Elliot Friedman had said in a couple places before the trade happened that the Canucks were interested in Brandon Carlo. So it sounds like, obviously, they wanted a roster player as part of the deal. They got that in Beauvillier from the Islanders. It sounds like Carlo would have been the roster player they were targeting from the Bruins. So if you're the Bruins, an equivalent package probably looks like Carlo, Fabian Lysell, and a first-round pick. You know, now I think, like, some of the reporting since then, I think people have said, like, oh, like, did the Bruins... is Carlo an untouchable for the Bruins? I don't know about that. I just don't think they were going to make that trade. And I understand why, because if you make that trade, you're subtracting from your defense. And I think we all agree that, like, if anything, they should add to defense and be looking for potential, whether it's just a depth addition or a potential upgrade to their top six. So now if you trade Carlo away, maybe you get Luke Schenn back. But as I've said before, Carlo to Luke Schenn is a downgrade. Like, Luke Schenn would be better off being your seventh or eighth defenseman. So I understand the Bruins not doing that if that were the package. The other options, like if you're looking in that price range to make the money work, would have been Jake DeBrusk or Pavel Zacha. Definitely not doing DeBrusk, like not the season he's been having. And Zacha, you just extended him, and we just talked about how good of a fit he's been on this team. Like, there's the considerations to messing with chemistry as well. Again, while I think chemistry can sometimes be overrated, like, it can't be ignored when you're rolling the way that this team's rolling. So, you know, they don't want to take anything off the active roster unless it's for a clear upgrade. And if you're trading one of those guys along with your top prospect and a first round pick, and Horvat might only be a rental, like, it's kind of a tough sell.
Yeah. I was about to say, more than anything, if they got the sense that he wasn't someone who was willing to be extended, there's really no point in doing it. Like, if you can't extend him and have him be your option for your top line center when Bergeron's gone, there's really absolutely no reason to do it. So if you weren't like 100% sure he's a guy that's not just a rental for you and that you can sign him for however long you want to sign him for, then it's a huge risk. And, you know, the reward is short term. You don't need him. It's more of a long term reward you would get from it, but only if you were able to pinpoint an agreement that you could already kind of have worked out before he comes here. But wouldn't be surprised if he wants to test free agency. And at that point in time, you're the Bruins, you're thinking, well, maybe we'll come back around to the idea of Bo Horvat when he becomes an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season.
Yeah, and they also, you still got to sign David Pastrnak. Like, you know, keep your priorities in order. I think when Horvat's name was first mentioned, it's natural to kind of be like, oh yeah, well, I mean, that would put them over the top, and, you know, it would solidify their need to succeed Bergeron, right? But, you know, this Boston Bruins team, they have more than enough high end talent up front, and they have the depth that you need, right? So like, offensively, this Bruins team is as deep as there is in the league. Now, you can still add, like, middle six, bottom six depth at the deadline because you need, because it's never a bad thing to have that. And if, you know, if you find the right player or two, that's great. But defense wins championships. So for my money, it's like, yes, like don't take Carlo away, or, you know, because he's 6 foot five and he's a really effective defenseman, NHL defenseman. But if the Bruins are going to add, like, yes, like a significant piece or a significant upgrade, I'd prefer them to do it on the blue line as opposed to up front if push comes to shove. But I think the proper depth moves will be more than appropriate for this Bruins team. So, yeah, I'm glad the Bruins, you know, weren't in on this trade, or the finalists for this trade, I should say. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I also, like, you know, I don't want it to come across as, like, I'm not valuing Bo Horvat or anything. I really like Bo Horvat, and wrote a column not that long ago how, you know, if the Bruins were going to dream big, like, he should be the guy to go after. But, you know, you don't know exactly what it's going to cost until you see what he goes for. And ultimately, he went for, if I were Don Sweeney, more than I would be comfortable giving up, especially with no guarantee that you're extending him. You know, but he's a really good player, but one who's also in a career season, obviously. He's on pace for over 50 goals. I don't think he's ever topped. What did he have? I don't think he topped like 35 in the past. So having a career year, that obviously jacks his price up. You know, yeah, I think he would have been a great fit. I think he's also a character guy. He's a team captain. Like, he would have done just fine here. I'm not worried about that, but it would be a lot to give up for him. And by the way, not totally out of the question that Bo Horvat gets traded again before the trade deadline, because the Islanders basically now have a month to, A, try to get back into the playoff picture with Horvat, who fills a huge need for them as a goal scorer, but B, to talk extension. I mean, if the Islanders don't turn it around and are out of the playoff picture 3-4 weeks from now and aren't particularly close to getting an extension done, they could very well turn around and trade him again. So, you know,
plot twist.
Yeah, Horvat trade rumors could pop back up. So we'll see.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing. It's probably not like what listeners want to hear from me here, because you know, it's a podcast they listen to for Bruins analysis. But I got to tell you, I have no idea what happens with these trade deadlines. All the speculation and the rumors, it's fun to talk about, but at the same time, it can be exhausting, because you think back to last year. Remember the guys we were talking about last year? The Bruins were going to get, like, you know, it was like, up until the last hour, it's like, well, maybe they get Max Domi, maybe they get this guy, that guy, and until something happens, it's like,
hey, Max Domi's coming around again. He's back on the market.
I know. So I'm just gonna let the deals happen, and then I'll react. All the speculation, it just drives you insane, because you think one thing's gonna happen, and like, who had the Islanders in on this? Did anybody think the Islanders were a possibility?
No one until very late. So, like, that same podcast I mentioned that Elliot Friedman had, like, I think that got posted like less than 12 hours before the trade went down. On that same podcast, I think he mentioned, like, you know, I kind of wonder about the Islanders here. They've been looking for an upgrade. Like, Friedman's one of those guys where, like, you know, if he's saying something like that, like, he's actually heard it. So, like, that kind of, like, perked my ears up, where I'm like, ah, the Islanders. And, like, also the Islanders, Lou Lamoriello has always been like this. Like, everything is kept under wraps with them. Like, remember, who are they trying to extend? They're trying to, like, extend someone recently, and everyone's like, oh yeah, the deal's already done. But then, like, 3-4 months went by, and it was like, wait, is the deal still done? Like, what's going on here? It might have been the Barzal extension. Like, everyone was like, yeah, like, it's done, and just waiting to announce it. And meanwhile, like, you're hearing nothing, because whatever Lou Lamoriello does, he just, like, gets everyone to shut their mouths and, like, not talk to people.
Yeah.
And Beauvillier is a lot to give up, too. Like, Beauvillier is liked there and has had some really good seasons there.
Yeah, he's taken a step back this year. Like he's had a down year for sure. But
and like, it doesn't mean that his potential isn't there. I think it's still there.
Well, Vancouver will suck potential out of anybody right now. So I don't know if that's gonna help him. But like Lamoriello is like he's made some moves in the last couple of years too. Like he traded away a first round or two for Romanov, Kyle Palmieri and Zajac, he gave away first rounders. And so, I mean, you know, the Islanders are like in a weird situation where they've gone for it, but they've never really been, even when they were in the conference finals a couple of years, it was kind of based off like just defensive structure. They're in no man's land right now. And that's a spooky place to be.
Yeah. And they don't really have the defensive structure anymore either. Cause they moved on from Barry Trotz. And so they play like a little bit more wide open now, but it hasn't really led to more scoring. And they've really had to rely on their goaltending even more than before. So, yeah, they better hope though that they turn it around or, you know, at least start winning some games or are in a better position going forward, because that first round pick they gave up, I think it's top 14 protected for this upcoming draft, but then it's unprotected the next year. So like you could see a situation where like they miss the playoffs this year. They don't re-sign Horvat. They don't have to give up the pick because it's, you know, it ends up being in the top 14. So they hold on to the pick for 1 year, but then are like taking a huge step back next season. And all of a sudden you're potentially giving up like a top 10 pick to Vancouver. Like that, it's a risk. Like he definitely took a big swing and took a big risk on this trade. And, you know, they better hope it works out, because it could set them back quite a bit if it doesn't.
Basically with the hope that you do it early enough and don't wait to the deadline, that you're like setting yourself up. You're not too far behind. It's definitely a bold move. I don't hate it for them. I think that once again, I feel like all the potential trades that could have happened for Horvat had high risk involved for the teams that were taking them on. So it was definitely a high risk move for them, but I actually think it makes a lot of sense.
I mean, it's definitely a bold strategy, Cotton. I just think, like, you know, the Islanders are just, they've for so long, the biggest knock on them is, you know, they don't have any true goal scorers. And it's like, well, while that's true, they better hope that they extend this kid, because if they don't, it's like, you just look at the standings and, you know, they've played more games than Buffalo and Pittsburgh, and they're behind both those teams in the wild card race. So, like, I don't know. It's just, to what you guys said, like they better make the playoffs. Cause if they in hope that he extends, cause if he doesn't and they miss, oh boy, that's tough. That's tough. So anywho, at least they got a new arena, right? Anything else you guys want to go over? I think we're kind of at that point now.
And by the way, their hope to make the playoffs is the wild card. Like this doesn't make them a team that's like top three in their division. Like this move makes them a wild card team. So, and then at that point, you're really hoping with the eighth spot, we're going to be able to somehow fight our way out of this, this conference and then to the Stanley Cup.
I mean, they've done it though. So like if any team can look at that, you know, they went to back-to-back Eastern Conference finals. I think 1 year they were the eight, 1 year they were like the seven. So, you know, it's in their history, but as I said earlier, like this team does feel different because that team did it with that defense we talked about, and this Islanders team hasn't had it.
I also think those teams that you're talking about, Scott, they kind of like, I don't know, I think they took advantage of a weird stretch for the NHL. I mean, like, I don't know I don't know. I mean,
the series against the Bruins was weird to watch.
They were both bubble playoffs that they went to the conference finals, and the second one was not, but it was a bubble season, and then they let fans in like right at the playoffs. So I don't know. I just think I think if they squeak into a wild card, pick who you want to lose to in 4 or 5 games, Boston or Carolina, because it's not going to last very long. So I don't know. It's like I said, for the Islanders, they better hope they extend Horvat, because if they don't, then it's just a stupid move. I don't think they're going anywhere in the playoffs, even with Horvat. So, I don't know, guys. final thoughts? Anything?
All-Star game.
Yay.
Yeah, I don't know if Scott wants to talk about that. I mean, there's not really much to say. I mean,
no, there's not. There's not. I literally just wanted to say All-Star game because other than that, I mean, we might have a guest for one of our episodes. Maybe try to get Raycroft on for one of our, you know, episodes that we have in between during the All-Star break. We're going to still try to put out some episodes regardless of the fact that there's no games going on because there's other stuff to talk about. And we can bullshit for a long time, as you can see. So,
I mean, a PSA I think worth mentioning is during this stretch of days where there's no NHL hockey, be careful about what you tweet because one Mr. Bradley Marchand, he likes to get to roll around in the mud sometimes. He's had a field day on Twitter the last few days, so he'll be looking for something to do, I think.
I know. Now he's got all this free time. He's just going to be sitting around scrolling Twitter.
Yeah, the NHL could use about 50 more of him because he's a gem. So, all right, guys. Well, I am all set. If you guys are all set, we can wrap this one up. Thank you all for listening. I guess we can call this the de facto like midway point of the season. I know they played more than half their games, but it's the All-Star break, so a chance here to kind of get some R&R for everybody. And thanks for listening. As Bridget said, we'll touch base again before the Bruins are off for like 2 weeks. So, you know, we'll talk before then, but thank you all for listening and enjoy the rest of your day. ¶¶